They share a border and the Nile River, but as Sudan is embroiled in a bloody war, Ethiopia is concerned about the security situation. What are the risks of a spillover, and can Ethiopia play the role of a mediator, as it's done in recent years? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the programme. I'm Imran Khan. For decades, Sudan and Ethiopia enjoyed strong economic and political ties, but recent developments have strained relations between the neighbours. A border dispute sparked by land claimed by both sides threatened a potential conflict last year, and Ethiopia's billion-dollar hydroelectric dam on the Blue Nile has been a source of tension for years. And now, with widespread conflict across Sudan and refugees crossing into the border with Ethiopia, some are questioning if new alliances will be formed. We'll look into that with our guests shortly, but first, this report from Katia Lopez-Hodiyan.
The unrest in Sudan could have wider political implications in Ethiopia. As fighting escalates, regional ties could shift. When Ethiopia's Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed met Sudan's General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan in January, problems were brewing in Khartoum, especially ahead of plans to transition to a civilian government. Abiy Ahmed, who had previously mediated political deadlock in Sudan, said he would not intervene.
My message for all of you is to prioritize Sudan, to prioritize the people of Sudan, and to draw your own solution for your problem. As you know, political, as a time of turmoil and crisis, requires tolerance and compromises.
Since then, the unrest has unraveled between the army and paramilitary rapid support forces. Some analysts believe this conflict could give an advantage to Ethiopia on several issues. Among them is the Alfashaga border region, a contested area claimed by both nations. Then there's Ethiopia's Renaissance Dam on the Blue Nile River. The multi-billion dollar project has led to a dispute with downstream countries. Khartoum worries the dam will reduce the amount of water it receives from the Nile River. The controversy has led to alliances. Sudan has partnered with Egypt to push for a binding agreement with Ethiopia. Now, after weeks of violence, many question if new ties will develop to garner political leverage. Both Sudan and Ethiopia have seen conflict in recent years. Sudan has hosted about 50,000 refugees who fled the fighting in northern Ethiopia between government forces and Tigray rebels that ended last year. But now it's Sudan that's again seeing waves of people leave, as the power struggle further threatens its security and political future. Katia Lopez-Hodiyan for Inside Story.
Let's bring in our guests here in Doha, Aisha El-Basri, researcher at the Arab Center for Research and Policy Studies. She's also the former spokesperson for the African Union. In Virginia, Etana Dinka, assistant professor at the James Madison University. He focuses on the political history of Ethiopia and Africa. A warm welcome to each of you. I'd like to begin in Doha first with Aisha El-Basri. Aisha, this is going to put Ethiopia in a very difficult position. It wasn't that long ago, in March, in Doha, that there was some optimism that there was going to be movement on the issues between the two countries, between Ethiopia and Sudan, particularly when it came to the border disputes. But now that's gone out the window. So where does Ethiopia land on this? Does it have a favoured person that it wants in this war? Is it remaining neutral? What's going on?
Well, To answer the question, we have to put the situation in a context, in the international context, but also in the regional context. Starting with the international context, the war, the ongoing war between the Sudan Armed Forces and the Rapid Support Forces, has been basically managed by the U.S. The crisis is being hardly managed by the Washington, which is trying to pull the parties to the conflict to back to the negotiation table. So far, there are some good signs. Because the Washington insists that it's going to compete with China and Russia, and that Sudan is a geostrategic point that it cannot afford to lose, and it has many other interests, economic, but also linked to the war on Ukraine and the Wagner factor in Sudan. So for all these reasons, Washington is committed to finding a way of going back not only to the negotiation table, but going back to the political framework agreement that has been adopted by most of the parties. So this puts it in a situation where Ethiopia, which is a pro-U.S. government, has to take into consideration this leadership. The second factor is the regional context. And the regional context, let's say, is favorable to settling not only the situation in Sudan, but also helping the relationship between Ethiopia and Sudan to remain on track, on a peaceful track. If you have noticed that the regional context has been marked by a tendency to go to negotiate the problems and settle the disputes, whether it's in Libya or in Chad or even in the Central African Republic. The situation on that border has calmed down. And Washington and his allies, they're committed to keep that calm, that political settlement right. ongoing. On the other side, you have also the situation with other countries, especially with Egypt and Ethiopia. Here we have an issue. We have lands and borders that haven't been demarcated. But with Ethiopia, I think the situation between Ethiopia right. and Sudan has advanced quite well, and they have reached a settlement that has been confirmed by the visit of Abiy Ahmed to Khartoum in January of this year.
Let's bring in Itana Dinka here. Abiy Ahmed has actually, as our guest just said, been in Khartoum. Things were going very well, and then we're in the situation that we're in right now. Where does Ethiopia, I'm going to ask you the same question that I asked Aisha, where does Ethiopia land on this? Does it have a dog in the fight?
The position where Ethiopia is located regarding the ongoing conflict in Sudan depends on its domestic issues and some regional issues. One important issue that brings Sudan and Ethiopia together is this land, very fertile agriculture land, disputed for decades between the two countries, Al-Fashaga, which during the Tigray War, the Ethiopian Prime Minister invited General Al-Burhan to Addis Ababa. The details of their discussion was not clear from what appeared then, but later, in relation to the public news that appeared weeks after Al-Burhan's visit to Addis Ababa, Al-Burhan replied to those news in public that Abiy Ahmed, the Prime Minister of Ethiopia, asked him to take over Al-Fashaga. That might have happened because by then the Prime Minister wanted to encircle Tigray on all sides, including on the side of Sudan. But now, with the war in Tigray coming to the conclusion, people may think the war and conflict in Ethiopia is over and the problem is now only in Sudan. But that is not the case. There is a changing dynamic within Ethiopia, which makes the relation between the two countries complex in relation to this particular issue of Al-Fashaga. Recently, Addis Ababa moved to integrate regional forces into the national army, which did not go well in the northern Amhara region. A good half of the soldiers in the Amhara region integrated into the national army, but a large number of soldiers reportedly turned rebels. And now operating in the border between Ethiopia and Sudan and in many parts of the Amhara region. Just a few days ago, a senior political leader in the Amhara region was gunned down by this rebel. So everything is not under control of Addis Ababa right now, because Addis Ababa is in a fight with regional forces regarding this territorial issue. But I don't believe Addis Ababa wants a fight with Sudan on this issue, although it wants to possibly retake the Al-Fashaga agricultural land.
But Aisha, that accelerates the war. If they take over Al-Fashaga, if they seize this opportunity that now Sudan is in chaos and Ethiopia moves into that area, it kisses goodbye to any Ethiopian mediation, and it will prompt a prolonging of this war. Is there a danger of that actually happening, do you think?
Well, unfortunately, there's always a potential for some incidents to go over control, out of control. This is a possibility that one cannot rule out. But what counts here is that the central government, the Abiy Ahmed, seems committed to helping Sudan move forward from this war. It has actually a vested interest in helping Sudan to sort out the conflict, and instead of adding to the situation another conflict, because as you said and as you said pointed out, the agreement that has been reached between the government, the Ethiopian government, and the Tigray Liberation Front seems going quite well. So Abiy has every interest in keeping that peaceful environment going on and going back to normal. He's trying his best to control these factions on the border and other factions, and that's what counts right now. What counts is the position of Abiy Ahmed. Abiy Ahmed has made clear signals, and he made clear statements to Sudan that he's not only willing to help, but he's pushing for an African solution to African problems. He's offered his mediation, and that is a sign that so far he's in control. This said, situation can deteriorate if some groups decide to sabotage the situation.
Etana, we're talking about mediation now, right? We're talking about the fact that Ethiopia could be a key player, perhaps much more than Washington, perhaps much more than the UAE, perhaps much more than any of the other partners. It shares a culture, it shares a border, it shares the Nile River. So it could be, and it has been in the past, but it also feels like that Ethiopia doesn't really have any leverage right now. And when you're negotiating with two parties, that's the key thing that you need. Does it have any leverage?
Ethiopia may have some leverage in this regard, but at the same time, it's not good to forget Eritrea, another important player in the region. I'll come back to that. Again, I'll return to a regional issue that confronted Ethiopia and Sudan over the past 2 years during the Tigray War. The hope of Addis Ababa, particularly the government of Abiy Ahmed during the Tigray War, was that by handing over Al-Fashaga to Sudan, it would be in control of everything in relation to Tigray, particularly to make Tigray encircled and sealed on the western side. That would even make refugees not to cross the border into the Sudan. That did not happen. As we know all, thousands of refugees made it to Sudan. And Addis Ababa complained multiple times, although not formally, through multiple media, that Sudan might have been helping the TPLF during the war. And now there is the issue of Eritrea. Eritrea also, the president of Eritrea also at some point showed interest to mediate before the outbreak of the war between political forces, including the differences between the civilian political actors and the army, as well as RSF. It seems that Khartoum declined the invitation, the interest from Asmara. Isaias showed this interest and got not accepted on this, he invited the RSF commander to Asmara. The details of what they discussed and what they talked about the issues in Sudan is not yet clear, but it seems like that Asmara is behind Dagalo's position. I am raising this issue for a reason, because Western Tigray, in addition to Al-Fashaga, Western Tigray has a border with Sudan again, because Sudan has a very long border with Ethiopia. So Western Sudan, Tigray is still partly under the control of Eritrea. Amhara forces are also operating in the Western Tigray region. Eritrea is not out of Ethiopia yet. So Eritrea too has a leverage. Now, in relation to the experience between Addis Ababa and Khartoum, the leverage of Addis Ababa is not very much strong. The only leverage it has is that it has ended the war in the north, and it is at a more stable position than it was 2 years ago. And in this regard, it may have some ability to bring together the two forces, not alone, but with the support of international forces like United States. Remember that in the negotiation between the Tigray Liberation Front in northern Ethiopia and Addis Ababa, the United States government was a key player. So,
Itana, I'm just going to... Itana, you make a very important point. You make a very important point. I want to bring in Aisha here. When it comes to leverage, Ethiopia doesn't have a huge amount, says Itana. That's giving other countries the ability to come in and to use their influence. What does Ethiopia need to become the key player once again, as it has been in the past? What does it need to do?
Well, let me go back to Eritrea, because it's connected. First of all, the mediation, the issue of mediation has been decided. I think it's been determined that the mediation is going to take the form of IGAD. It's IGAD that is going to facilitate the mediation, and it's under, of course, the framework and the leadership of the U.S. and Saudi Arabia. So, if you take this has been confirmed from official sources in Sudan from both the Al Burhan and Hameti's sides. And that leaves us with why Eritrea and Ethiopia don't seem to have the leverage, none of them, actually. Eritrea has showed some inclination to Hameti, to Rapid Support Forces, as your guest has pointed out. And also, Eritrea has showed some inclination towards Russia. Let's not forget that there has been a rapprochement between Moscow and Asmara, and there has been some talk about Asmara might be offering Russia the possibility of for establishing a naval base on the Red Sea, which is a red line for Washington. So this is amazing.
Aisha, I'm just going to disturb you there. Sorry about this. Our third guest that we wanted to bring you earlier we've actually managed to get a hold of her. She's in Port Sudan. Dalia Abdul-Mumin is a political commentator. She's in the middle of trying to evacuate her family from Sudan. Dalia, just before we get into tonight's topic, Godspeed to you, and I hope you can get your family out. But just describe the situation. Just describe the situation that you're seeing in front of you right now.
Well, I'm trying to utilize all routes that I can take, whether it's one of the evacuation flights or the Saudi-operated ferries. But proving a little bit difficult because for the Saudi ferries, we need a visa. But to go through the whole process center to get the visa and to apply is proving to be quite problematic simply because of the large number of people trying to apply as well. And the evacuation flight is just a matter of potluck if we'll get accepted to get on one of the flights or not. Right now, I'm at the airport trying to see if I can get my immediate family on one of those flights. So,
well, Dahlia, thank you for joining us from such a troublesome situation as well, and I wish you luck with it. Now, we are talking about Ethiopia. We're talking about its potential leverage. Both our guests in Doha and in Virginia have suggested that there isn't a huge amount of leverage that Ethiopia has over the situation in Sudan right now. Would you agree with that?
I think every single invested party in what's happening in Sudan has leverage over the two, over both the RSF and the army. But the issue is, the question is it in the best interest of the people, of the Sudanese people? And at the same time, we do need this leverage. We do need the, you know, the added pressure, the arm twisting that will come from the player, the invested players. And there's also the other issues, like, let's say the state of Ethiopia. Ethiopia plays a part, then you'll have people who will say no. This is the, you know, this goes against the best interests of Egypt and the army, because Egypt and the army, you know, they see eye to eye. And then if you get the Egyptians involved, then people will say, no, the RSF will not accept it. So it's a very complicated matter. It's not black and white. But at the same time, for us to move forward, for us to have to bring an end to this current conflict, but all parties who are somewhat invested in this country need to really apply pressure, proper pressure on both the RSF and the army.
But Dahlia, do you think that Ethiopia's role in particular is useful right now? It has been in the past. It was only just in March, actually, where there was movement in Doha from both sides, Sudan and Ethiopia, about the border dispute. That's all gone out the window now. So where do you think Ethiopia's usefulness comes in? Is it still that kind of player? Or, as our other guests have suggested, this is now much more about all of the regional players and what, there isn't one real power that can bring this conflict to an end?
I mean, Ethiopia and Sudan are very much intertwined, I mean, in terms of our history and our relations. And I think in the best interest of all countries in the surrounding area, and those especially the ones that border Sudan, it is in everyone's best interest that this conflict is brought to an end. And we'll just, I guess, when it comes to politics, there's no clear cut. I mean, I can't tell you this is the right way or that this is the wrong method. But at this moment in time, I'll just keep repeating it. We just need to bring more pressure. You know, we need to push more, especially the international arena, the players. They just have to really pressure both sides, whether it's the Saudis or the Ethiopians or the Egyptians or the Americans or the UN, whatever entities out there that can have an influence on both Himitzi and Burhan, it will be welcomed by me, of all people, because we can't continue like this. The devastation, the humanitarian aspect of this crisis will be tenfold, and then there will be a spillover, and no one wants that.
Let me bring in Aisha Albasri, who's joining us from Doha. Aisha, you can hear it in Dahlia's voice. You can hear the panic, the stress. She's trying to get her family out of out of Sudan. She's trying her hardest to be able to do that. Oftentimes, we forget about the human side of this when we're talking about potential negotiations or potential leverage. But here you have somebody who's a crucial political commentator within the country telling us this needs to come to an end now. But these talks, they're not happening right now, are they? That's the problem.
Well, the fact that both parties have agreed to go to most probably to Jeddah to go back to negotiation and discuss the issue, it's a good sign. The other issue is Ethiopia's leverage, as we discussed. Ethiopia has two points that go against it. First of all, I think it lacks credibility when it comes about the African solutions to African problems, because the solution it chose to settle the conflict with Tigray was military. So what kind of message Abiy would be sending to the world when he's talking about a peaceful settlement when himself chose to fight the opponent? The second factor.
Aisha, sorry, we are running out of time, and I do want to come to our other guests as well. Very quickly, Etana, the talks are going to happen. Both sides have actually agreed to that. The location, the format, the timings, all of that is and needs to be negotiated. Are you hopeful that these talks will bring the conflict to an end quickly?
I hope so, but hope should be related to what is going on the ground. And let me bring in one international issue, the role of China and Russia, especially when such conflict is brought to the table in the United Nations. During the Tigray War, Russia and China were consistently standing behind Addis Ababa's position and pushing back the Western efforts to end the conflict in Ethiopia. The end product of that kind of dynamic was African Union was empowered because China repeatedly proposed that this is Ethiopia's internal issue and no one needs to get in.
Sorry, Etana, we are running out of time. We are running out of time, and I do want to come back to Adalia. Adalia, you've heard what our guests have said, that there are several aspects to this conflict. With all those players, with all these people, do you think any kind of negotiation, any peace talks, are going to help you and bring this situation to an end quickly?
I think this conflict can be brought to an end quickly. I'm assuming that's the question you asked. But it depends on those, the outside parties. Is it in their best interest that it's brought to an end? It comes down to that. And if it is, how do they play out both sides so you can appease both sides? Because neither of these two guys want to lose or want to come out, but, not the victor. So how do you appease both sides and how do you make sure that this appeasement is for the best for the country and for its people? And that's the conundrum. And I think it's a very hard equation. It's a very hard factor that no one can really work out with. Because they played them off of each other for so long, it's now reached a point where who's going to come out, who's going to emerge victorious, so to speak.
Adalia, I want to thank you for joining us under such extreme circumstances. And I also want to thank Aisha Albasri and Etana Dinka. And I want to thank you as well for watching. You can see the programme again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And you can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Imran Khan, and the entire team here, bye for now.